Well, hello, this is Jeff Gaudiosi, and you're listening to another edition of The Blues Fix on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. One of my favorite subgenres of the blues is blues rock. And you know some of the household names like Joe Bonamassa and Kenny Wayne Shepherd, but you can also add my next guest to that group. Alistair Green just put out his fifth solo record, The New World Blues, and he's here to talk about it. Welcome, Alistair.
Hey, man, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And before we get deep into the record, let's do a little bit of background. You're a Southern California guy, Berklee College of Music out here on the East Coast. And we'll talk about some of the bands you've been in the past, but how did you discover and fall into the blues? Those aren't really two blues hotbeds that you think of.
That's a good question. You know, I started playing guitar in the early to mid-80s. You know, I was born in 1971, so I played some other instruments, you know, early on, but I started playing guitar, you know, I think maybe 86, 85-ish. And so, you know, that was obviously the time of a lot of the hard rock guitar heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a huge fan of, you know, obviously Eddie Van Halen, who we have to mention. As well as guys like Jakey Lee from Ozzy's band and Badlands. Vivian Campbell from Dio, and then River Dogs and Def Leppard. Those were kind of my guys that got me interested in playing guitar. And when I was like a junior or a senior in high school, a friend of my dad's, you know, knew that I played guitar and loaned me a stack of records. And that stack of records was Stevie Ray Vaughan's first four albums, Allman Brothers at the Fillmore East, B.B. King live at the Regal, Buddy Guy, A Man in the Blues, Johnny Winter's Second Winter, and Jimi Hendrix, Cry of Love. I mean, I remember this, you know, very well.
Yeah.
And that was a very pivotal moment. There was, you know, because if you listen to, you know, the guys that I mentioned, Eddie and the rest, you know, they were influenced by blues rock. You know, I mean, they were, you know, all, you know, Cream and Zeppelin and Johnny Winter fans, you know, all those guys. You know, Vivian Campbell's the guy that, you know, I first heard mention Rory Gallagher in a conversation. So there was something in their playing that, looking back on it, that I really gravitated towards. So when I heard, you know, like the records I just mentioned, B.B. King and Stevie Ray Vaughan, the Allman Brothers, it was like, oh man, I get it. You know, I hear now, because all those guys were very capable guitar players as far as playing fast, technically challenging stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a lot of feel in their playing, and can grab a note and do something with it, and you know, dig in and play with that sort of, you know, bluesy feeling. And so that's how I kind of fell in love with that music and started pursuing it. And I went pretty far down the blues rabbit hole as far as getting into a lot of the traditional stuff, as far, you know, Chicago blues and Muddy Waters, and
go back to the beginning, right?
Yeah, and so I got into a lot of that stuff, and I still maintained, you know, my hard rock roots. I mean, that's part of who I am. And as far as, you know, you're mentioning hot, you know, not necessarily hotbeds of blues, but here, you know, I grew up in Santa Barbara, California.
Mm-hmm.
And was very fortunate, you know, I mean, I guess I can kind of morph this into my Berklee experience as well. But there are a handful of blues artists from Santa Barbara. Kim Wilson from the Fabulous Thunderbirds was born in this area, as well as there's a duo named Tom Ball and Kenny Sultan, who are kind of like a more of a traditional acoustic ragtime Delta blues duo. And then there was a band called the Pontiacs, featuring Mitch Kashmar, which was a kind of a West Coast blues. So there was definitely blues here. And when I went to Berklee, I was there for 2 years, from 90 to 92. You know, I just kind of, you know, begun my blues journey. And when I got there, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan had just passed away. And I made friends with a lot of blues fans at the school, and I actually ended up kind of talking my way into a Stevie Ray Vaughan tribute show, although I didn't have any real business being as a player at that point. But I saw Ronnie Earl. Ronnie Earl gave a clinic at Berklee when I was there, and that was, you know, just mind-blowing, just to be, you know, because I didn't know who all these guys were. I was just discovering all this stuff pre-internet, you know, and all that. And so it was really exciting because there was – you know, there was, you know, blues players at the school that were very into it, as well as getting to see, I saw Albert Collins when I was in Boston. You know, Lonnie Mack opened for Albert Collins. I went to the show with, you know, a fake ID from a friend by myself, that kind of thing. And so, you know, it definitely was kind of a journey that started for me, you know, right at kind of at the end of high school, you know, and that's basically how it happened.
And, you know, it's funny because I'm in Connecticut, not far from where Berkeley is in Boston. And, you know, even though you don't think of New England as, you know, a hotbed of the blues, it's always been pretty successful. There's always been a lot of clubs around here that, you know, we've been able to see it and experience it.
Yeah, there's a whole circuit on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of musicians, you know, from the area, as well as, you know, venues. You know, there's a lot of tour stops in the blues circuit, you know, all up in the Eastern Seaboard over there.
And the new record, The New World Blues, is produced by Tab Benoit. How did you first meet Tab, and what led you to working with him and his new label?
Well, I've been going to the Big Blues Bender in Las Vegas for a few years. My band, you know, got a gig there, as well as I got hired to sort of be the resident guitar player in the backup bands that they have at the Blues Bender. It's called the Bender Brass. And, you know, so I was going out there, quote unquote, to work, you know, and play music. And Tab is a regular there. He's one of the regular headliners. And so I met him, and at the time, and I know we're going to circle back to this, at the time I was still playing guitar with Alan Parsons.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the blues world, you know, it's interesting that, you know, you don't associate Alan Parsons with it.
Exactly.
Really remotely blues related. But, you know, and so, you know, so that means different things to different people. You know, to people that love the Alan Parsons Project and the Beatles and Pink Floyd, it's a big deal. To people that are fans of Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf, they could kind of give a shit. But, you know, that's not to say that there are not people in the blues world that recognize that, you know, that's a name and blah, blah, blah. And Tab is one of those guys. You know, Tab's a fan of, you know, 70s, you know, progressive rock and production. You know, he's big into Steely Dan and whatnot. So when I met Tab, I was introduced to him as, hey, this is Alistair. He's here to play guitar and blah, blah, blah. He's also the touring guitar player for the Alan Parsons Live Project. And so we kind of hit it off because he is a fan of that music. And he's also, you know, he's really, I mean, he's stand-up comic funny because he used to be a stand-up comic. And I've been known to bust a joke or two. So we just kind of, we hit it off. And so I would go back, you know, each year over the past few years and see him, and we'd, you know, joke around and hang out. And, you know, evidently, you know, he went online and, you know, checked me out on YouTube and stuff. And so a couple years ago, I was at the Blues Bender in 2018, and I was hanging out with him, and he said, hey, you know, I've got a label and, you know, I'm making records. Do you want to come down and make a record with me? And at the time, you know, I'd left Alan Parsons. I'd done a couple solo records with my band. You know, I had, you know, it's the big challenge, and not to go too far down any of these rabbit holes, get off topic, but, you know, the big challenge is to go and tour. And I had some disappointing experiences with booking agents at that point. And I just signed on to go tour with Sugar Ray Rayford to support his new record at the time. So when Tab said, hey, man, you know, you want to come do a record? I'm like, I would love to. I just agreed to go out and I knew I was going to do probably about a year with Sugar Ray, the album promotional tour. I said, as soon as there's a gap, you know, I'll write and I'll love to come down and schedule it. And it worked out. We were able to schedule it. And, I went down and made a record with him, and we had a fantastic time, man. I'm really happy with how it came out.
Well, so, and even though you've been on the scene for a while, and so, you know, you've had a couple records with your own band and been on the road with Alan Parsons and Starship, this record sort of seemed like a rebirth. You know, does it feel different working with Tab and kind of bringing all of those influences you have into one record, you know, really for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, you know, blues rock, I think you can kind of cover a lot of ground. And that's why I always say I'm a blues rock artist. I love the blues and I love to rock.
Right.
And so, you know, working with Tab, I knew that I wanted to make a more blues centric record with him. The last studio record that I did, Dream Train, is really a classic rock record with some blues sprinkled in. And I knew playing with Tab, you know, I was going to be, you know, being, you know, promoted to his audience. And he was going to be playing drums and his bass player Corey was going to be playing bass. So I wanted to really, you know, capture the strengths of what everybody could do in the studio, as well as come in with material that we could just learn and lay down, because that was another part of, you know, how we approach this and how Tab likes to record and approach making records is you're going to come in, you're going to show us a song, we're going to learn it, and we're going to record it right there. You know, it's not like we went and toured any of the stuff. I mean, I did demo, you know, a good portion of record beforehand just to give the bass player a little bit of a heads up and just so that I could have some songs with me when I showed up. But yeah, I mean, I really wanted to get a heavy blues vibe. I wanted to take advantage of the fact that those guys grew up in Louisiana and have their own approach and feel to playing music. I wanted, you know, to be open to all of their, you know, ideas and how they were going to interpret the songs. And, you know, I didn't want to go, you know, too far into, I mean, obviously, if you listen to the record, there is rock. I mean, there is, you know, the title track is, you know, a pretty heavy song. The lead off track is pretty heavy, but you know, a lot of the stuff in the middle there is very blues based. You know, I mean, there's a handful that, you know, I guess there may be a couple of like straight 12 bar things, but I mean, not a ton. Right. As far as, you know, what you're saying, as far as bringing in, you know, some other influences, there are some things that were a little bit outside of anything that I'd really done before. There's a song called Bayou Mile, which isn't totally out of character, but it's definitely a little bit different of a vibe.
My and then there's a song, on the record, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's funny, man. That's mine. People saying that, it's mine too. Mm-hmm. And then there's a song called Heroes, which is kind of a rock ballad, I guess. That was written. Both Heroes and Bayou Mile were written at the studio. Those were two that got conjured up out of thin air while I was making the record with Dad. And they're two of my favorite songs. And he said, I mean, it's funny because he said, he's like, you know, your favorite stuff's going to be the stuff you come up with down here with me. And I was like, kind of, yeah, whatever, guy. And then sure enough, it's like, yeah, man, I love those. I mean, I love all the tunes and definitely had a hand in. We definitely messed around with and arranged some things a little differently and changed some music stuff up. But yeah, I feel like I brought in, you know, a lot more of my blues influence, as well as being open to letting all the other stuff kind of creep in there.
And let's get into some of the songs. I mean, lyrically, there are some really positive, uplifting songs like, you know, Living Today and When You Don't Know What to Do. But there's also some pretty biting commentary that's pretty fitting for this time of year. I mean, Live and Fair and No Longer Amused.
You noticed.
Yeah, just a bit. Yeah, I mean, yeah, were ones you had before you came into the studio?
I wrote the majority of this record in February of 2019. I had almost an entire month off from Sugar Ray. And, you know, I try to write things that, you know, I endeavor to make things universal and, you know, and whatnot. I like to, you know, put my personality and my thoughts and my emotions into everything, but I also, you know, want to leave it up to listeners to, you know, interpret things. But, you know, it's a tough time in the world overall. And, you know, the fact that I wrote this music or, you know, a lot of this music, you know, whatever it is, a year and a half ago now, and then the fact that it's just become almost so much more pertinent. I mean, there's people that probably think I just wrote and released this record in the last couple of months.
Right.
You know, which is not the case. And I wanted to make sure, you know, I put in the liner notes, I wrote this in 2019. So, I mean, you know, I can't help but want to, you know, express that there is, you know, in the world, I mean, just look at what's going on in the entire world. I mean, there is a darkness that has fallen, and I wanted to acknowledge that, and I wanted to address that, but I also wanted to, you know, balance that out, like you said, with some songs of hope and some songs about, you know, really trying to embrace love and positivity. It's easy to get really negative, And I think, you know, music needs to reflect everything. It needs to reflect the darkness and the light. And at the end of the day, for me personally, I want to lean towards the light as much as I can, because I think music is there to help people stay positive. You want to feel, when you listen to music, I mean, for myself, you know, you want to connect with the artist, you want to connect with the songs, and you want to feel like, a lot of times if you're not feeling good, if you're feeling depressed, you want to feel that you're not alone in that. And so sometimes hearing some dark stuff, you go, yeah, man, I'm not the only person that's feeling frustrated and depressed. And then if you can also kind of lift people out of that with some songs, then I think you're on the right track. So.
And you mentioned the title track, The New World Blues, which ends the record. It's one of the more optimistic takes on the record, but it also features just some amazing slide playing, which has really kind of become a trademark of yours. Talk a little bit about your slide playing. I mean, is that something you kind of take pride in? Because it really shines on that song.
Right on. You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I got interested in slide fairly early, and by the time I got turned on to slide, you know, I got turned on to slide originally by hearing, you know, Jimmy Page, and also Jakey Lee, you know, when he started his band Badlands after he left Ozzy.
Such a great record.
That first Badlands record is just locked out, and we could spend a whole hour talking about that. But he played some slide, so I was, you know, a huge fan of that stuff. So when I got interested in slide, I also knew, having already kind of been turned on to blues and how to kind of go about figuring out where it came from, it was pretty easy for me to really kind of trace that. And coincidentally, at that time, I was in Boston at Berkeley at that time when I started getting heavier into slide. I'd seen the Allman Brothers while they were on tour in Boston. And Warren Haynes was, you know, the guitar player at the time. It was just on fire. And I'd been digging on the Allman Brothers. So I really got into slide for a while there and went and learned, you know, some Elmore James, learned some Muddy Waters, got into Bucca White, and tried to really kind of grasp, you know, a lot of the, you know, I do play some national guitar, you know, some steel-bodied slide guitar, acoustic stuff. And it has really influenced my playing in general, even the way that I pick. You know, I use my fingers a lot as opposed to a pick, even when I'm not playing slide. And it is one of those things that I have done a lot of on all of my records. I've played slide and written songs in open tunings, which has opened up a whole different sort of songwriting aspect for me as well. You know, being in an open tuning and finding some cool chords and finding some different ways to express myself. And it is one of those things. I also, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to plug this, but I do sessions from home and play on people's albums. And it's one of the things that I get asked to do that not everybody does. You know, it's one of those, like, we need slide guitar on a track. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that does that in a variety of, you know, different styles. So I do take pride in that, and I appreciate you bringing it up. So.
Yeah, and we've mentioned a couple times the living legend that is Alan Parsons. Just what was the education like being alongside him night after night, knowing everything he's accomplished in his career?
You know, the thing that Alan has that really has, I think, elevated him and elevated him early was just his ability to really kind of listen critically to things and be able to hear something and, you know, hear, hey, there's, you know, these harmonies and what's kind of working with what. And that's really his thing is as a engineer and producer, the live aspects, you know, of his thing. And, you know, I mean, he's, you know, he plays guitar and keyboards, you know, okay. And he sings okay. And, you know, he wasn't the primary writer on the Alan Parsons stuff. That was a guy named Eric Wolfson. His primary role was really putting things together, getting musicians that played well together, you know, really getting the most out of the song. And so the live stuff was all great. But the times that I really was paying attention the most and really trying to soak it in was when I did a handful of studio things with him. And that's when I was really like, okay, this is where this guy, you know, shines. So it's just, that was really the thing. And, you know, as far as, you know, other takeaways, I mean, he's very kind of business oriented and, you know, so I kind of, it is the music business and we all spend so much time on the music part of it. And as musicians, you know, these days you really have to keep an eye on the business part of it. And so that was another, I mean, you know, it's maybe not what you're hoping to hear, but, no, but it was, you know, I mean, knowing that he was keeping an eye on stuff and, you know, looking out for the bottom line and, you know, whatnot. And, yeah, I mean, I could go on into like other aspects of things, but those are the things that stick out to me are just, you know, being a critical listener, whether you're recording or live, you know, and whatnot. And then, you know, handling your business and keeping track of what's going on with the money because, you know, as we know, I mean, being a full-time musician, unless you're writing hits and you're, you know, packing arenas, you got to be, you know, paying attention if you're going to pay your bills. So,
and you have just an incredibly active social media presence. I mean, from impromptu performances, telling stories, just kind of hanging out with your fans. Does that medium become even more important now when you can't get on the road and play these songs for people?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important for, you know, any artist, especially, like I said, if you're not packing arenas and, you know, if you're not, you know, have, you know, crazy hit songs out there, you have to, I mean, and I enjoy interacting with and engaging, you know, fans and friends, you know, I mean, and the people that follow me on social media and I work to build my presence there. You know, it's not it now, especially, I mean, everyone's, you know, trying to get your attention. And there's so many, you know, different ways that people kind of work the system. And, you know, you look and you see these guys playing guitar in their bedroom with 100,000 followers that probably haven't played a gig in their entire life. And it's like, how the hell is that possible? So, you know, there's this kind of I hate to use the word competitive and music in the same sentence. But everyone's trying to get heard, you know, and I think it's important as artists to engage with your fans, to stay active, to, you know, talk about new music, to talk about, you know, what you're listening to and see what other people are listening to and to check in because, you know, people are, you know, a lot of people are at home alone or at home, you know, wondering what the hell's going on. And I think if you can bring a little laughter and a little bit of light into their day by way of popping on Facebook or, you know, posting your favorite Van Halen record or whatever it is on your Instagram, then I think that's a good thing. And I think it's healthy for everybody.
Without a doubt. And you had a tour scheduled with Tab that ended up getting canceled because of everything that we're all going through in the world. Any ideas on when all this clears up? You know, would that tour kind of rebook? Would you look to do something else? Any plans yet on what it's going to be like when you do hit the road?
You know, I've been talking with Tab's manager and you know, with him a little bit. So he's doing a handful of shows, I believe, next month in the South. I'm not on those right now, but we are talking about me going out with him next year. Nothing's nailed down, but you know, there's a handful of acts that can go out and play, you know, the social distance safe clubs or events. And it has to be, you know, and in order to do that, you have to be a ticket seller and you have to be willing to go and do that. And Tab's one of those artists that can play, you know, some shows and do that. People are going to come out. So, yeah, I mean, we're talking about that and we're talking about, you know, next year, early next year, spring. And just, I think it's all going to really depend on, you know, how things progress over the next couple months. If we're, you know, if this country is able to, you know, get through, you know, the winter and not, you know, get things under control and whatnot, I think it's going to be quite a while until things, you know, get back to where people are going to really feel comfortable going out and playing at regular capacity shows and whatnot. So the plan is, yeah, man, let's figure out a way to do it. I was like, I got this record I'm really proud of and Tab takes his artist out on tour, mm-hmm. which I really want to go and do and promote the album and play these songs for people and you know, do the thing, live the rock and roll dream.
Well, can't wait for that to happen. I look forward to catching you on the road. Hopefully get to say hello in person when you hit the East Coast here.
Yeah.
My guest today has been Alistair Green, a great new record out called The New World Blues. Check it out. It's available everywhere, all streaming services or physical copies available at all the usual suspects. And Alistair, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. Best of luck with the record, and hopefully you get to say hello on the road soon.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully we'll get to do it again sometime in the near future.
You got it. Good luck, my friend.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.